Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, January 2nd, 2009. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. Happy New Year, and the year is beginning where the old year ended with the Senate recount. Today's the deadline in the recount for local elections officials to submit wrongly rejected absentee ballots to the Secretary of State's office. But the Coleman campaign is seeking a court order changing the process to determine which rejected ballot should be included in the count. Minnesota Public Radio's Mark Zedeklik has more.
Under Minnesota Supreme Court order, county elections officials were to identify wrongly rejected absentee ballots and get those ballots that both of the campaigns agree should have been counted to the Secretary of State's office by the end of the day. The Secretary of State's office planned to count those ballots Saturday with an eye toward wrapping up the recount early next week. But the Coleman campaign filed an 11th-hour petition with the High Court alleging inconsistencies with the process. It wants a court to change the procedure so that any ballot, either of the campaigns or election officials want considered, would be looked at under a process administered by the Secretary of State's office rather than local officials. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
There's no question cities around Minnesota are tightening their belts. Governor Tim Pawlenty's recent cut to local government aid was part of a plan to solve a $426 million deficit in the current budget. Now the question for local government officials is how to adjust their budgets with as little impact to city residents as possible. Minnesota Public Radio's Elizabeth Baer reports that cities are taking a hard look at which services should stay and which should go.
Coon Rapids City Manager Matt Fulton says his city received nearly $835,000 less than anticipated after the cuts in December. Fulton says although no cuts to his city's services have been made yet, his staff is considering shortening the work week. And they've also talked about closing city offices for a week during the 4th of July and Christmas holidays, which could force city employees to take days off.
Other than dealing with snowstorms and public safety and those kinds of things, traffic loads in City Hall really goes down those weeks. So those do end up to be logical time frames for closing down municipal facilities. The amount of savings that you get out of doing that is still to be determined.
In Richfield, the city lost $619,000 in state aid. City Manager Steve Devich says the city's cut half a dozen full-time positions in the last 2 years, and it's now looking for long-term changes to the city's business model.
You know, the magnitude of the kind of losses that we're looking at, you know, simply closing a skating rink right now, that kind of thing, it falls very short of the kind of adjustments that we need to make. I'm looking more at, again, the whole systemic issue of what kinds of services are we going to continue to deliver here in the long range going forward.
In all, about 40% of the state's 854 cities faced an immediate shortfall in December. And since then, city leaders have had to start making some tough decisions on how to cope with less revenue for the new year.
Cities are looking at, you know, a whole range of things, from hiring freezes to travel restrictions to purchasing freezes. You know, many cities have already started to impose hiring freezes just as a way to start to deal with the immediacy of the budget cuts.
That's Gary Carlson of the League of Minnesota Cities. He says because the cuts came so late in 2008, local governments had little time to make any significant adjustments to last year's budget. Carlson says cities that didn't receive state money are also looking for ways to trim their budgets. For example, the city of Eakin didn't receive any local government aid, but it did lose nearly $400,000 in promised state reimbursements for homestead credits on property taxes. City Administrator Tom Hedges says he and his staff started looking at smaller cuts in early 2008 in anticipation of the downturn. Some of the cuts affected soft services like parks and recreation.
As use changes in our parks and recreation, we've closed a couple of skating rinks, warming houses. We've done that, and we watch other operations accordingly, and that's reflected in our 2009 budget.
Eakin officials are considering changes like shortening the work week from 40 to 36 hours a week, which could mean pay cuts for some employees. They're also considering measures like changing all printers in city offices from color to black and white. Hedges says that alone could save the city nearly $10,000. The city's also scaled back on when and how it plows its trails and walkways.
We had to contract for service, and the trails would be plowed at the same time the streets were, to a tune of about $75,000 a year. We cut that out, and now we're plowing the trails ourselves, same crew, same equipment, no additional expense, but they have to be, they're delayed a couple of days until the streets are done.
And like his counterparts in Coon Rapids and Richfield, Hedges says he's not counting on any aid for 2009. The state is still facing a $5 billion deficit for the next biennium, and that number could go up after the next budget forecast is presented early this year. Elizabeth Bayer, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
A Minnesota lawmaker says she will introduce legislation to restrict the use of lead ammunition. Recent studies found lead bullet fragments in venison, and a number of eagles have died from lead poisoning. Some hunters are voluntarily giving up lead bullets. Others say the whole issue is being blown out of proportion. Minnesota Public Radio's Dan Gunderson reports.
Beth Sieverhuis has been hunting deer since 1976. The war-old woman also spends time rehabilitating injured birds. She'd never really connected those two activities until this year, when she saw several eagles die from lead poisoning. She says they likely ingested the lead while eating deer gut piles left in the woods by hunters.
It's a pretty sick feeling to realize that I could have been doing something to, well, both contaminate food that we're eating and make wildlife sick that are feeding on the gut piles. It's heartbreaking to see these eagles just reduced to nothing. They can't stand, they can't fly. It's no way to die.
Sieverhuis says she was skeptical of the danger posed to humans by lead fragments in venison, but those dying eagles and the potential danger to humans changed her mind. She says she's used her last lead bullet, and from now on, she will use copper ammunition.
From what I've read on the internet, copper works quite well as a substitute, but it's more expensive. However, I shoot one or two bullets a year, so it's not much of a sacrifice for me. I understand that hunters find this difficult. I found it difficult, but I believe it's time to change.
But should lead bullets be banned? DFL State Representative Sandy Mason thinks there should be an outright ban, or at least some restrictions on lead bullets.
We know it's impacting the death of birds, and then we've also know that we've been working really hard to keep the lead from our children. Somehow, there's got to be a way that this is within our environment, and we need to find a way to curtail it.
I don't think the need is there for government regulation, and I don't think that there's a traumatic influence here that is needing a government regulation.
Mark Johnson is executive director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. He says there's no question lead is a neurotoxin, but he says there's not enough research to show lead bullet fragments are poisoning people.
Yeah, we have lead fragmentation in venison. It's in small amounts. The exposure is limited. So is it really a problem? And the answer seems to be no at this point.
Johnson used a type of copper-covered bullet this year. He says it worked well but was less accurate than the lead bullets he used in the past. Johnson says some hunters he's talked to are happy with the copper bullets. Others still prefer lead. He says until there's stronger evidence of the danger posed by lead fragments in venison, the choice should be up to hunters, not the state. He would like to see more research before there's any talk of banning lead bullets. State Representative Sandy Mason, whose district includes several southern metro suburbs, agrees there should be more research, but she says there's already enough evidence for her that lead fragments are a danger to humans and to birds like eagles. She expects to have a bill restricting the use of lead bullets ready to be heard early in the upcoming legislative session. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday. Happy New Year. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.